open your Bibles, please, to the book of Psalms, and we're going to be looking at Psalm number 60. Psalm 60. So, question for you. Suppose that the thing that you dread the most is what just happened to you. Suppose the thing that you most would not want to have happen did happen. And you were at a point where all you could do was pray. How would you pray? How would you make that prayer? So, and how would you make it strong enough that you could kind of know in your heart that God really heard it and he's going to do something about it? Is that even possible? Well, this psalm is going to help us to answer that question. And David, in his psalms, a lot of them are prayers. And this psalm is a prayer. And it happened at a time of a great, great catastrophe, a huge military blunder, you might say. Not so much a blunder, but a problem. Things just didn't work out. And here's a man who's the king. He's the number one politician in his country. He's the military leader of his country. The whole country looks to him because of his valiant warrior skills. And he's in a predicament. And in this psalm, there's a secret. We're going to dig and try to see if we can find it. And in that secret is where the power is. And if we can find that secret and use it ourselves, then we can have the same power of prayer that David had. It's actually not so much of a secret because it's here, but it's easy to read over it and not get it. So before we read that, let's just set the story so you know what's going on when we get to the psalm. Lot, when he escaped out of Sodom and Gomorrah, had two daughters. His wife was turned into a pillar of salt because she looked back, and they ran off and went up into a cave. And we won't go through all the details of it, but the two daughters each had a child by Lot. And the younger daughter, had a son, and his name was Ben-Ami. And Ben-Ami was the father, the one from whom all the Ammonites descended. And they were bitter enemies of the Israelites. And there was a series of wars that started with them back in the day days of Saul. And at that time, Saul overcame them, but it was like a back and forth thing. It kept having struggles. David fought two major wars with them. I don't know if it was a single battle or several battles, whatever, but there were two major conflicts that occurred in a relatively short period of time with the Ammonites. And the first campaign went pretty well, and the Israelites defeated them, but not totally. And so the king of the Ammonites, he moved. Now, to give you a perspective, let's see, that's east, right? Okay, so here's the Jordan River, Sea of Galilee, Dead Sea. The Ammonites are kind of up here to the northeast of Israel, a little south of Syria. And off to the east was Mesopotamia. So they moved their operation eastward, hired the Syrians, and tried to bring other tribal kingdoms into their ranks from beyond over in Mesopotamia. And once they had this big army, and it was good size, they figured, okay, now we can beat David. Well, David heard about it, and Joab, who was the leading general of the army, and his brother Abisha, who was his right hand, they all got together, the people, and they all took off after the Ammonites. And there was a great battle. And in that battle, the Israelites defeated soundly the Ammonites, the Syrians, and the other people that joined in with them. And The thrashing was so great that Syria lost 1,000 chariots, 7,000 horsemen, and it's Ammon. The Ammonites lost those. And 20,000 foot soldiers. And then the Assyrians lost 22,000 foot soldiers. We're already up to like 50,000 losses. And so the Israelites had really accomplished a significant defeat. So they were busy setting up posts in the Syrian and the Ammonite empires, their regions, so that they could maintain control there, sort of like a police force. And in the process of doing all that, word came to David that the south part of the country, which had been left largely undefended, had been attacked by Edom. And Edom had gone in and just like wreaked havoc. It was a terrible thing. And when he got that news, this is the prayer he prayed. So he doesn't know how many people have died. He doesn't know, the extent of things perhaps, but he knows that it's a major disaster. In spite of this victory, this is like gonna negate the whole thing. So it's a big problem. And he's thinking about his people. How could I have left them so undefended that they fall prey to this other attack? So there's a lot on his shoulders at this moment. And this is his prayer. So here we come to Psalm 60. O God, you have rejected us, broken our defenses. You've been angry. O restore us. You have made the land to quake. You have torn it open. Repair its breaches, for it totters. You have made your people see hard things. You have given us wine to drink that made us stagger. I could explain this. That verse there, I looked this up. That is kind of an unusual verse. What he's talking about is it was such a severe blow that we were stupefied. We were just staggering about in shock and not able to think clearly. That's what he's saying. You have set up a banner for those who fear you, that they may flee to it from the bow, that your beloved ones may be delivered. Give salvation by your right hand and answer us. God has spoken in his holiness. With exultation I will divide up Shechem and portion out the vale of Succoth. Gilead is mine, Manasseh is mine, Ephraim is my helmet, Judah is my scepter, Moab is my washbasin. Upon Edom I cast my shoe. Over Philistia I shout in triumph. Who will bring me to the fortified city? Who will lead me to Edom? Have you not rejected us, O God? You do not go forth, O God, with our armies. O grant us help against the foe, for vain is the salvation of man. With God we shall do valiantly. It is he who will tread down our foes. So, the problem was worse than what I just described. The real problem is what David talks about at the very beginning of the psalm. His real problem is that God has rejected them and broken down the defenses. So that's like compounded on top of everything else to realize that they were out of favor with God. At least that's what he thought, that's what he felt. And so this was really a heavy burden. And not only do we get it from the first verse, but he repeats it again in the 10th verse. Have you not rejected us, O God? You do not go forth with our armies. So he was like, what am I supposed to do here without God? We can't do this. So we got to look at this prayer to see what was it that David... What did he incorporate into his prayer? How did he pray in a way that got God's attention to get an answer? And there are three things that he does. And unfortunately, this isn't going to be like a typical thing where you have point one, two, and three. The three things show up at randomly through the psalm, so we're going to have to take the 3 points and keep them in our mind. Sorry to do this to you on a Sunday morning, but the first point is that that David cried out for help. It doesn't do us any good if we go, you know, just grit our teeth and keep going through a difficult time if we don't pray and ask for God's help. And there's nothing wrong with crying out to him. David did it. Look at Psalm 69, verse 13. That says, just a couple pages over, "But as for me, my prayer is to you, O Lord, at an acceptable time, O God, in the abundance of your steadfast love, answer me in your saving faithfulness." And I'm sorry, that was the wrong verse. 69, verse 1. Try that again. "Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in deep mire and where there is no foothold. I have come into deep waters, and the flood sweeps over me." He's not just saying these words like it's a habit, and he says the same thing every time he prays. He's crying out from his heart. He's in trouble. He needs help. And there are other examples, but let's just move along to the second point. So the first one is he cries out to God for help. The second point is that he uses God's attributes when he prays. And that's the secret ingredient. That's the thing that unplugs the power of God to go and answer the prayer. Now, I'm not saying that if you haven't prayed that way, nothing's going to happen. But what I'm saying is, if you want to really tap into God and really have that kind of close prayer relationship like Jesus had, remember John 17? That's a great example of this, of praying like this. So we'll talk about that as we go through. It'll be a little more clear. But let's just describe it like this. A very good way to do it is to use the names of God and find the names of God that apply to whatever your need is that you're praying about. So I'm glad to hear about that Bible study, because that's really a worthwhile study to get a hold of the names of God. I once heard a pastor, in the middle of his sermon, he just started going on and on and on. I couldn't even believe how long he went, and he didn't repeat any of the names. It was just an amazing thing, and really helped me to have a sense of how great God is by just thinking of all of his names. And out of those names, there's going to be some that fit. And to remind God that he is this, those names reflect who he is. And so the other thing is to look at what he's done and to figure out, okay, what does that tell us about who God is? Like, he gave manna to the children of Israel in the desert. Well, that's wonderful. But what does it tell us about God? He's a provider, Jehovah Jireh. He cares about his people. He loves his people and provides for them. He's faithful and good to his word. There are lots of things you can come up with when you think about what's behind what happened, what God did. And those are the things that need to be used in your prayer. So we'll see some of it as we go along. And the third thing, so the first one is cried out to God. Second thing, he used God's attributes in his prayer. And the third thing is that he believed God would hear the prayer and answer it. And he has a lot of faith. If you look for those three things as you're reading the Psalms, it shows up. The faith that David had was great. It was unconditional, too. No matter what the circumstance was, he just trusted God, and he wasn't going to let go of that. So let's look at these through the psalm, verses 1 through 3 first. O God, you have rejected us, broken our defenses. You have been angry. O restore us. You have made the land to quake. You have torn it open. Repair its breaches, for it totters. You have made your people see hard things. You have given us wine to drink that made us stagger. So the attack from Eden, the Edomite attack, who did that? Was it the Edomites? This is a hard thing. Who's he say? Who does David say did it? He said God did it. God allowed it. Well, why does he say it like that? The reason is he's using one of God's attributes. He's doing it in a veiled way, so it's not like just right out there for you to look at. But what he's saying is, God, you're the sovereign one. You're the one that really controls all things. Look at, Psalm 66, verse 7. We're jumping in the middle of something, but he's making a statement here that applies. Who rules by his might forever. Let's go back just to the last line of verse 6. There did we rejoice in him who rules by his might forever, whose eyes keep watch on the nations. Let not the rebellious exalt themselves. So what he's saying here is God's might is the might that is forever, that's over all other strength and power. He's the one that's exalted. He's the one that's in control. He's the ultimate sovereign, the almighty sovereign. And he watches over all the nations. And then over in Psalm 67, verse 4, let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for you judge the peoples with equity and guide the nations upon earth. He's the one that controls what's going on. All the stuff that's going on in our world today, God is doing it. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense to us at this moment, perhaps, but there's a plan there, and that plan is being executed. The Edomite attack on Israel was part of his plan. One benefit of it is that we get Psalm 60, and we get to learn some things like about how to pray. It's okay. So let's look a little further here in the psalm. In verse 4, he has, in the first three verses there, he's crying out. But at the same time, he's acknowledging who God is. So the first point and the second point are in those first three verses, that he acknowledges who God is, he uses his attributes to put God in his right spot, his right place as over all things, and he uses the chance of saying that as a way to call out. Verse 4, you have set up a banner for those who fear you, that they may flee to it from the bow. There's different ways that gets said, but basically what he's saying is in the old battles, if things, you know, the troops would end up getting scattered about. And you all start out as a great group, and you hit the other great group, and then things just kind of splinter up, and there'd be struggles and fights going on all over the place. Well, in the course of events, one of the great generals or leaders of the people would find a little hillock or a place to put the banner for their troops, and then would yell out, to me, as loud as he could, and other people would be saying, to the king, or whoever he was. And then the troops would realize that's a rally call, and they would all get back to the banner. They'd see the banner, and they'd run back in that direction and get together. Then they would get fresh instructions and directions and guidance as to how to fight the war. And a lot of times, that would be a turning point. And so that banner going in the ground, what David is saying is, God has put up that banner and said, to me, and to come to him, and he'll give us the help that we need, the guidance that we need, whatever it is. So that's kind of like the second thing, where he's talking about his attribute, that he's the commander in chief, that he's God in control. And then verse 5, you notice there's a over in your margin maybe or some point there you got a little thing that says Selah, S-E-L-A-H. Well, that is like you might say a pregnant pause. So here he said this about God. making him the ultimate standard of valiant warfare and authority. And then he says, that your beloved ones may be delivered, give salvation by your right hand and answer us. Now he's using the verse 4 as a statement of faith. He's saying, this is who God is. This is what he does. Verse 5, he's saying, on the basis of that, answer us and give us deliverance. And by your right hand, you're the one that's able. You're the king. You're the general. You're the one that's almighty. Now do it on our behalf. Verse 5 is not the same crying out as verses 1 to 3. This is a statement of faith. He's saying, I believe that this about you, and I'm gonna stake my claim that you're gonna answer this prayer. The Lord wants us to have faith. He wants us to show that kind of faith. So David is demonstrating it. Verse 6, God has spoken in his holiness. With exultation, I will divide up Shechem and portion out the vale of Succoth. Gilead is mine, Manasseh is mine, Ephraim is my helmet, Judah is my scepter, Moab is my washbasin, upon Edom I cast my shoe, over Philistia I shout in triumph. These are all these different people, but what David is saying here is God in his holiness and in his power and his authority from his holy place, he is saying, this is my plan for all these people. And he's saying, this is what it is. And David is recounting that. He's reminding God of this. He's saying, this is your plan. Here's your plan. This is how you feel about these people. You're going to do these things. And I believe that it's going to happen that way. This is a huge statement of faith. And then we go down to verse 9. Who will bring me to the fortified city? Who will lead me to Edom? Have you not rejected us, O God? You do not go forth, O God, with our armies. Verse 9 is an interesting verse because he's the leader of his people. He is the one that would lead them over there, or his delegate, which would be Joab or his brother Abishai. So he's saying, who will lead us? He's recognizing that he doesn't have the authority that God has. He doesn't have the power that God has. He isn't almighty. God is, and God is the one that has to lead to bring the answer and to bring the victory. But the problem is still that David feels rejected. I mean, here's all these Israelites that have died or been abused, and it's just like, so he's still crying out, and yet he's demonstrating his faith. He's got God in his rightful place. He's been talking about his attributes. Then he says in verse 11, grant us help against the foe, for vain is the salvation of man. Now he's telling God, there is no other help that's satisfactory, that will do the job. Only you can do it. With God we shall do valiantly. It is he who will tread down our foes. That's the ultimate statement of faith right there. That's it. He's got his battle gear on. He's ready to go. And he's staked his claim that God's going to answer this prayer and bring deliverance. So he was in a pretty difficult spot there. And in his crying out to God, he used God's own character and his attributes to strengthen his prayer. And when he did that, he was showing his faith, and he made statements that demonstrated that he really believed God could do something about it. And in the process of that, there was a result to his prayer. You know what it was? Abishai, however you want to say it, he took part of the army, was sent down by Joab to go down to Edom and try to straighten things out. And he did. God blessed it. God heard this prayer, Psalm 60, and Abishai went down there and took out 18,000 Edomites, and that was the end of that. It was over. And they got back their land. There was pain and sorrow, no doubt, but the battle wasn't lost. The war was won. And it was done by this war, won by this prayer here. That's where the battle was fought. They still had to do their fighting, but with God, the matter was it needed to have God's help. God needed to be the one that did it. Just like at the beginning, he's declaring that God's the one that did this to them. Now he's saying, we will do valiantly, and God did it. And that was the end result of his prayer. Wouldn't you like to have that kind of strength of prayer with God? To pray, and as you go through the prayer, just know, yes, God's going to hear this, and he's going to answer this. There's no reason you can't. There's no reason I can't, except we have to put this effort in to pray like this. It's not easy. It does take practice. You might say, well, David was a king. We're just regular people here. And that's true. We are just regular people. But we still have big problems. And when those big problems come, we need to be able to pray like David, and to know that God's going to answer that prayer and help us. So let's think about these three things. We need to cry out to God. There's no need to wait. Just cry out to him. But remember the other two points. To bring in the attributes of God and to do it in faith and to believe. God will answer that kind of prayer. Who are the people in the Bible that you saw who were prayer warriors that had great answers to prayer? They all had faith. They believed God was going to do it. And God did. So a couple just practical thoughts about this. First of all, God cares about your needs. 1 Peter 5:7, sorry for the old King James Version, but that's what I learned it in. Casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. He does. And that's a motivating factor for him. And there's no harm in using the scripture and praying that back to him and saying, Lord, you care about me. You said so. He tells the truth every time. So take it and say, Lord, this is true. You care about me. And this is the need I have. And then apply some other attribute of his that fits that need. He'll hear that prayer. There's, we could look at look at Psalm 57 or 59 and read through those sometime and just put a little mark or something or make notes about what are the things that he says about God in that psalm. And as you read down through that, Psalm 59 is another psalm of another situation that was desperate. David was being hunted by assassins to be put out of the way by Saul. And he escaped. And that prayer is Psalm 59 when he was in that situation. And just look at how he uses God's attributes in his prayer. And, you know, trying to work through that in your mind. It's not an easy thing, but the more you work at it, the better it will be. This takes practice. David and Goliath, when David met Goliath, do you think that was the first time he picked up a sling and a stone? He had been practicing since he was a little boy with a sling and a stone. That's how come he could take out a lion and a bear and Goliath, who was like 1.5 times as tall as him, if not more. And he did that by practice. But the same thing is, he was a great person of prayer, but it was practice. Look at all the psalms that are his prayers. He practiced it. So if we practice it, then we'll have the strength and the energy to pray like this. We'll have the faith, and we'll have the knowledge. So Here's some parents, and they've got a little child, and it's just about starting to walk, or trying to get up. So the child, there they are. Okay, come on, child, get up, see if you can walk. And the child falls down. Oh, forget that, you're no good. Send you back where you came from. So that's not what parents do. Oh, you're hurt, come on, get up, you'll be okay. You know, and then, good, you took half a step. You know, there's all kinds of encouragement and joy about it. Look at little, whoever it is, you just took a step. You know, it's like, it's a big deal. So this is the same way. Learning to walk is like learning to pray like this. Start with the baby step. Don't worry about it if you can't pray like David on the first try. Give it time, but just keep working at it and looking for the attributes of God that fit. A name of God, something he's done, one of those things, and work that into your prayer. It takes a little bit of thinking at first. You're not going to probably be able to just do it as you pray. I tried that. It didn't work for me. But if I think about it, then I can pray that way. And that's the way to pray strong. That's the way to tap into the resources that David had, is to cry out, pray in faith, and use attributes of God that fit with the need. And if we can practice and learn to do that, we're going to see a lot of amazing answers to prayer. We do already, but just think of what we could do if we could tap into God in a better, bigger way. I should just add this one thing. We're not trying to put God in a box where he has to do what we want. What we're trying to do is to open the channels of God's power to go through our prayer into the need and to resolve it. And this is how we would open that channel of power. So God has his own plan, and that's going to happen with or without us. But we need to be part of it. And our prayer like this is bearing fruit for God, which glorifies him. And that's something he's looking for. He's looking for us to do, is to glorify him by praying right and seeing the answers to prayer come to pass and being filled with gratitude and thanksgiving to him and wonder at how he did it. And those things bring honor to him, and that's what he seeks. So we're basically, by doing this, we're kind of like falling in line with his plan and helping it to come to pass in the way that he wants us to. So it's a win-win situation for us. And let me just add one other thing as a note. If you can't think of anything, but you remember a song, use the song, like a hymn or one of the worship songs, something that fits that situation. Use that song. Like, I'm not going to sing it. Does Jesus care when my heart is pained too deeply from mirth and song? As the burdens press and the cares distress and the way grows weary and long, does Jesus care when my way is dark with a nameless dread and fear? As the daylight fades into deep night shades, does he care enough to be near? Does Jesus care when I've tried and failed to resist some temptation strong? When for my deep grief I find no relief, though my tears flow all the night long? Does Jesus care when I've said goodbye to the dearest on earth to me? And my sad heart aches till it nearly breaks. Is it aught to him? Does he see? Oh, yes, he cares. I know he cares. His heart is touched with my grief. When the days are weary, the long nights dreary, I know my Savior cares. Just sing something like that or another hymn that means something to you, and that works. David and Paul and Silas, when they were in that Philippian jail, they were in a bad way. They were beaten up, they were bleeding, they had open wounds and lots of bruises, and their feet were in stocks, so they couldn't move. And they're sitting in the inner prison, which was probably one of the filthiest places you can imagine. And nothing, no water, nothing. They're just sitting there. And deep into the night, they prayed and they sang. So I think, no, this is my guess, but I think that they prayed similar to what David did. I'm sure that they were crying out, Lord, we need some help. We need some water. We're hurting here. Please help us. But they also, I think, they were praying in faith. They were people who lived by faith. They'd been through it before, and they were in it again. And then they would break out into song, and then they would pray some more, and they would cry out to God, and they would be saying things of praying prayers of faith, and then praying prayers of ouch, you know, pain, suffering. And then they would break into another hymn and sing again. It said all the prisoners around there were listening. These were the hardest of the hard criminals. And they're listening to these men praying and worshiping God and suffering. And it was a testimony to them. But they also got an answer right on the spot. An earthquake and all the doors opened, the chains fell off, the stocks opened up, and they were free. But they stayed there. And then the Philippian jailer and his whole family got saved. All that stuff happened because they prayed like this and because they worshiped God in the middle of it with songs. So don't be afraid to use that. And I'd really encourage you to join with me. I'm going to do this myself, to work to pray like this and to see the answers like David saw.